Chapter 5. Exit Horseman.
Third passenger, sir, I apologize. He's not to be trusted. War is his name, and aggression is with him.
He repacks the pistols. A silence follows. The coach and passengers move downwards and disappear towards the coast.
Spirit of the Pities, ill chanced it that the English monarch George did not respond to the said emperor. Spirit sinister, I saw good sport there, and pean at the will, to an impel so stultifying a move, which would have marred the European broil, unsheathed all swords, and silenced every gun that riddles human flesh. Spirit of the Pities, oh say no more, if aught could gratify the absolute, wold verily be thy censure, not thy praise. Spirit of the years, the ruling was that we should witness things, and not dispute them. To the drama, then. Emprises over channel are the key to this land, stir and ferment. Thither we.
Clouds gather over the scene, and slowly open elsewhere.
Scene 2, Paris. Office of the Minister of Marine,
Admiral Dessers seated at a table. A knock without.
Dessers, come in. Good news, I hope.
An attendant enters.
Attendant, a courier, sir. Dessers, show him in straightway.
The attendant goes out.
From the emperor as I expected. Courier, sir, for your own hand and yours alone.
Dessers, thanks.
Be in waiting near.
The courier withdraws.
Dessers reads. I am resolved that no wild dream of Indiana and what we there might win, or of the West, and bold reconquest there of Suriname, and other Dutch retreats along those coasts, or British islands nigh, shall draw me now from piercing into England through Bowland as lined in my first plan. If I do strike, I strike effectively, to forge which feat there's but one way, planting a mortal wound in England's heart, the very English land whose insolent and cynical reply to my well-based complaint on breach of faith concerning Malta, as at a means pledged, has lighted up anew such flames of ire as may involve the world. Now to the case. Our naval forces can be all assembled without the foe's foreknowledge or surmise, by these rules following, to whose text I ask your gravest application. And, when conned, that steadfastly you stand by word and word, making no question of one jot there. First, then, let Villeneuve wait a favoring wind for process westward swift to Martinique, coaxing the English after. Join him there Gravina, Miss Sciasi, and Gantome, which junction once effected all our keels, while the pursuers linger in the west at hopeless fault. Having hoodwinked them thus, our boats skim over, disembark the army, and in the twinkling of a patriot's eye all London will be ours. In strictest secrecy, carve this to shape, let never an admiral or captain send save Villeneuve and Gantome, and pen each charge with your own quill. The surelier to outwit them, I start for Italy, and there, as twere engrossed in fates and coronation rites, abide till, at the need, I reach Bowland, and head the enterprise. Napoleon.
Dessers reflects, and turns to right.
Spirit of the years, he buckles to the work. First to Villeneuve, his one-time companion and his boyhood's friend, now lingering at Bowland, he jots swift lines, the duly to Gantome. They are sealed forthwith, and superscribed colon break, not till on the main.
Boisterous singing is heard in the street.
Spirit of the Pities, I hear confused and simmering sounds without, like those which thrill the hives at evenfall when swarming pens. Spirit of the years, they but proclaim the crowd, which sings and shouts its hot enthusiasms for this dead ripe design on England's shore, till the persuasion of its own plump words, acting upon mercurial temperaments, makes hope as prophecy.
Her emperor will show himself, say they, in this exploit unwavering, keen, and irresistible as is the lightning prong.
Our vast flotillas have been embodied as by sorcery, soldiers made seamen, and the ports transformed to rocking cities casemented with guns. Against these valiants balance England's means. Raw merchant fellows from the counting house, raw laborers from the fields, who thumb for arms clumsy untempered pikes forged hurriedly, and cry them full equipped. their batteries, their flying carriages, their catamarans, shall profit not, and in one summer night we'll find us there. Recording angel, and is this prophecy true? Spirit of the years, occasion will reveal. Shade of earth, what boots it, sire, to down this dynasty, set that one up, goad panting peoples to the throes thereof, make wither here my fruit, maintain it there, and hold me traveling through findless years in vain and objectless monotony, when all such tedious conjuring could be shunned by uncreation. Howsoever wise the governance of these mass mortalities, a juster wisdom is who should have ruled they had not been. Spirit of the years, nay, something hidden urged the giving matter motion, and these coils are, maybe, good as any. Spirit of the pities, but why any? Spirit of the years, sprite of compassions, ask the immanent. I am but an accessory of its works, whom the ages render conscious, and at most figure as bounden witness of its laws. Spirit of the pities, how ask the aim of unrelaxing will, tranced in its purpose to unknowingness? If thy words, ancient phantom, token true. Spirit of the years, thou answerest well, but cease to ask of me. Meanwhile the mime proceeds. We turn hair from, change our homunculus, and observe forthwith how the high influence sways the English realm, and how the jacks lip out their reasonings there. The cloud curtain draws. Scene 3, London. The old House of Commons, a long chamber with a gallery on each side supported by thin columns, having gilt Ionic capitals. Three round-headed windows are at the further end, above the Speaker's chair, which is backed by a huge pedimented structure in white and gilt, surmounted by the lion and the unicorn. The windows are uncurtained, one being open, through which some boughs are seen waving in the midnight gloom without. Wax candles, burnt low, wave, and gutter in a brass chandelier which hangs from the middle of the ceiling, and in branches projecting from the galleries. The house is sitting, the benches, which extend round to the speaker's elbows, being closely packed, and the galleries likewise full. Among the members present on the government side are Pitt, and other ministers with their supporters, including Canning, Castlereagh, Lord C. Somerset, Erskine, W. Dundas, Huskisson, Rose, Best, Elliot, Dallas, and the general body of the party. On the opposite side are noticeable Fox, Sheridan, Windham, Whitbread, Grey, T. Grenville, Tierney, Earl Temple, Ponsonby, G., and H. Walpole, Dudley North, and Timothy Shelley. Speaker Abbott occupies the chair. Spirit of the years, as prelude to the scene, as means to aid our younger comrades in its construing, pray spread your scripture, and rehearse in brief the reasonings here of late to whose effects words of tonight form sequence.
The recording angels chant from their books, antiphonally, in a minor recitative.
Angel I aerial music, feeble frame dull unresolve, unresourcefulness. Sat in the halls of the kingdom's high counselors, whence the gray glooms of a ghost-eyed despondency wand, as with winter the national mind. Angel too, England stands forth to the sword of Napoleon nakedly not an ally in support of her, men and munitions dispersed inexpediently, projects of range and scope poorly defined. Angel I, once more doth Pitt deem the land crying loud to him. Frail though and spent, and an hungered for restfulness once more responds he, dead fervors to energize, aims to concenter, slack efforts to bind. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.